Hi, this is Rachel McElroy.
Hi, this is Griffin McElroy.
And this is Wonderful.
This is Wonderful, a show where we talk about things we like that's good that we're into. A lot of people say, who the hell are you to tell me what is good?
A lot of times just people on the street just walk right up to us.
Yeah, they just say, who the hell are you? They don't even say the other stuff.
And
about
I say, hi, I'm Rachel.
And I say, hi, I'm Griffin. And then they give us $200.
No.
I don't know why.
That doesn't happen for me.
Oh, man, I'm always getting to here in D.C.
Specifically 200.
Specifically here in D.C., you tell someone your name, they give you $200 and a nice firm handshake. Usually it's a politics guy who does
Yeah.
Because they, you know, want you to feel like you're part of the process, part of the machine. And that's so huge for me. I'm so happy to be here in the studio with my lovely wife, Rachel, to tell you about all these wonderful experiences that we've been having.
I got so scared that you were going to spring something on me. I'm so happy to be here today because I need to tell you
that
I've found a new co-host.
And his name is Reggie. He is super funny. We are not married, me and Reggie, but he's got a lot of big ideas.
And a skateboard, and I can't compete with that.
No. I mean, you're pretty good at skateboard. I will say you're more of a street skater. Reggie's more vert, but do you have any small wonder? Like, Reggie doesn't ever come up with small wonders, so maybe, you know, you can hedge the market there.
I'm going to say the feeling after you get your teeth cleaned.
Yeah.
And it's just like, I did a good thing, and yes, now it's done.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, ideally, I wouldn't have to go back. Unfortunately, I do because it had been several years.
but
I had this feeling of like, I've been thinking about this for a while and I haven't done it. And now I did it. And that was a good thing. And I'm glad.
I also went a long time without dentistry because of COVID. Became very easy to say, like, well, I don't want someone in my mouth.
I know, that seems like the worst place for them to be.
But then last year, I sort of broke the dam and I did a lot of dentistry work last year.
Yeah.
And now I feel like I'm good for another 3 or 4 years to just kind of like kick it.
That's what they tell you. They say, hey, we say every 6 months.
Yeah.
But you've been such a good boy.
You've been a good boy. Go on your own dental journey. And so that's my current plan. I'm going to say Taskmaster, man. We've gotten back into it in such a big way. We fell off.
Didn't we mention that last week? Maybe we just mentioned that we were watching it.
Man, I don't know. We've finished the most recent series, I think, series 16. So funny. Just, I think, the best cast front to back.
Sue Perkins. I'm pretty sure we talked about this last week.
Okay, did we? Well,
but maybe it wasn't your small wonder. Maybe we were just chit-chatting.
Shooting the shit. We do that sometimes.
That's the thing on this show.
You go first this week.
And I do.
I would love to hear what you've prepared for us today.
So I decided that my topic should be, and I've kind of been wanting to do this for a while, and it was one of those things I had to check and make sure we haven't done this because I've been thinking about it, but I didn't know if I would have enough to say, but it is the stadium organist.
Yes. Yes.
Yes.
Huge.
Yes.
Huge. It's what a weird facet of just sort of sports culture of just like organists are in two buildings. One is church. The other is sports buildings. And
it's
I
true.
Like that.
It's true.
Is the connection there that we are supposed to be church-like in sports arena? Is it meant to sort of evoke a, you know, like a transcendental experience while you're watching these beautiful games being played?
Well, so organists used to be like in movie theaters too.
Right. I guess that's
like if
point.
You were doing like live accompanied entertainment,
yes,
it was usually an organist that was doing it.
Yeah.
I
wish they still did that, by the way, and didn't warn you, but you just like walked into Wonka, which is a musical, but they have just an organist sort of jamming over the other music that is taking place.
Yeah, it always feels really delightful to me. Some of it is nostalgia. Some of it is like if you are somebody that went to sporting events as a child, it is maybe one of the few things that feels similar.
Okay.
You know, like it's... I don't know. It's been a constant for a lot of teams for a long time. And there's just something, I don't know. It I find it delightful.
One time I was visiting my nanny in Florida my whole family was there. And she took us to a pizza restaurant that had an organist, but he also had like all those other like wild supplemental Like there's a button that sets off symbols. And it's like that, I think you should leave sketch with Fred Willard.
Yes.
And it was a really, 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 really weird fucking vibe. Just the weirdest vibe. It was not suitable, I think, for a dining experience.
I think it's also like a lot of environments you go into just have background music, you know? Like if you go into a retail establishment, usually they have some kind of music playing.
Yeah.
But the organ really stands out.
For
sure. You really notice like this is different.
I have a deep fondness for the organ right now because I've been incorporating a lot of organ into the music for our upcoming Adventure Zone series, which starts tomorrow, The Adventure Zone versus Dracula. Quick plug, check that out. It's organ heavy.
So organs, as I mentioned, were used in theaters, obviously church. They first started appearing in sporting events at Chicago Stadium, which is where the Chicago Blackhawks and the Chicago Bulls played, in 1929.
Jeez, wow. That's a long time ago.
Yeah.
I guess that is kind of the golden age of organs.
Now, when I was researching this, they talked about how organs were used for, quote, a psychological accompaniment for events, which it was used in quotes. I have not searched out the source on that, but I like this term, this like phrasing of psychological accompaniment.
Yeah, I guess so. It's really
like supposed to get you hype.
Yeah, that's weird. Like in 1929, I get it because we didn't have like a bunch of other stuff, but then like, you know, I think that Darude creating Sandstorm really rendered a lot of organ or other sort of sports music completely redundant. But I do love the, I guess, the novelty of keeping that dream alive.
You know, I have
that
no idea the reference that you just made.
Darude, Sandstorm? I swear to God you'd know it. If it's man, now I have to play Darude Sandstorm.
Oh, yeah.
Sports.
Okay, yeah, sports.
Hockey, sports. Basketball, football, baseball, let's go. Hockey, let's go. What if this was the new theme song to Wonderful? Maybe just for live shows?
We would have to start the whole show differently.
We would have to come out in jerseys.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't want to have to pay Darude any money.
So organs, as they are typically used today and have been used, National Anthem. Charges, the short musical pieces that foreshadow something happening. So like dun 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 dun.
Yep.
Clappers.
What's that?
Music or melodies that get fans excited.
I don't. Okay. Okay. Clappers is what we call those.
Yeah. Like let's go.
That sounds a real clapper.
Yeah. And then in baseball, the seventh inning stretch.
Yeah.
As you mentioned, though, organists starting to fall out of favor in the 80s and 90s. The Tampa Bay Lightning, though, took out 574 seats in their arena to install the largest pipe organ in the league back in 2011.
I like that.
Which I kind of love. Like, everybody's kind of moving away from it. And they're like, no.
No, not us.
No, we're going to make sure people can't buy tickets, so we have a big organ.
Yeah.
There are a few teams that don't have it. A lot of them, it's said that it just kind of doesn't match the tone, which I kind of understand. So, for example, Vegas, which is a relatively new team, tried out an organ, felt like it didn't really fit. And I think it's kind of like the nostalgia thing I was talking about. Like, if you have been with a team for decades and the organ is part of it, you hear it and you're like, yay.
Yeah.
But if you've got a brand new team in your city, you're like, wait, what is this? Like, I was just jamming out to the Black Eyed Peas and now there's an organ?
Jokes aside, I would be very curious to hear how organ adoption fell off when jock jams became like the conversation.
A lot of the articles I read were recent, like 2022. Washington Capitals is somebody who got rid of their organist after 22 years of the same organist. That's the thing. That's the other thing, is that people that become the organists stay the organ.
Well, yeah, because who all plays the organ? It can't be too many folks.
This also happened with Vancouver Canucks that same year, 2022.
Bloodbath.
They got rid of their organist.
It's AI. It's AI taking all the organist jobs.
Of the 32 NHL teams, Only six don't have organists. It includes Philadelphia, Carolina, Dallas, Arizona, Vegas, Edmonton, and I guess now Vancouver as well.
Tragic. A tragedy. How do you even get psyched for hockey without an organ bumping in your ears?
Another new team, the Seattle Kraken, brought in an organist. Very specifically, apparently, now I don't know a lot about the film Slapshot.
Yes.
But their organist is the same organist that played in the 1977 movie Slapshot. He apparently cold called them when they were getting started and was like, hey, I happen to play the organ if you're looking for somebody. And they brought him in, and now he's just part of the scene.
I do like that. Assert yourself. Put yourself out there.
I didn't realize that the St. Louis Blues had a particularly notable organist until I was reading this article about Seattle. And it said one of the peers he reached out to for advice is Jeremy Boyer, who has been the organist for the St. Louis Blues for 15 years and has a massive social media following, which I was like, what? I mean, I don't know what massive is. He's got, I mean, for an organist.
Right. It's probably a matter of perspective, I imagine.
He has like over 100,000 subscribers.
Pretty fucking good, I will say, for anyone, especially an organist.
Probably. Yeah. Pretty good. He has been around. So I don't know a lot about organist history in St. Louis. Ernie Hayes for 30 years did both the Cardinals games and the St. Louis Blues games.
Damn, busy dude.
And when he passed in 2012, Jeremy Boyer took over for both of those roles.
So the same dude plays for the Cards also.
Yes.
That's a lot of playing an instrument, I will say.
Well, and as you mentioned, his other gig, perhaps not surprisingly, I don't know how common this is, but he also plays at his church.
Okay.
That is his role. He is the director of sacred music and liturgy at St. Francis of Assisi's Catholic Church in Oakville.
And also plays organ covers of Black Eyed Peas songs every other night.
Yeah, so if you want to look this guy up on YouTube, I sent Griffin some links. I particularly enjoyed his cover of Rage Against the Machine's Killing in the Name of.
Yeah, really, really, really good.
Part of his appeal, and I think social media following, is that he will
organize songs that have no right to be organized.
Yeah, he did a medley of songs from the 2010s that included like Katy Perry's Firework.
Can't Stop the Feeling, Party Rock Anthem.
Just a delight. There's something so charming to me about a modern music being played on a old-timey instrument.
Yeah, for sure.
Jerry Boyer, also a young guy. He is only 2 years older than me. So like somebody.
I thought you were going to say, he's only 2 years old. It's incredible, one, that he can play this huge instrument. Two, that he's been playing it for 15 years. That's wild.
No, he... I didn't think people in their 40s were playing the organ, but apparently he got his Bachelor of Musical Education at the Southeast Missouri State University and just started playing the organ right around the time that he graduated college and kind of apprenticed with this Ernie Hayes guy who
I love that
was the previous organist.
This reminds me when we talked about what are they called? Carillon bells, like big tall towers, and there's like six people alive who do that shit. I have to imagine there's more organists, but not like a ton more.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, this is one of those like relics that I don't know, may have an expiration date on it, but I really enjoy that it exists.
Yeah, for sure.
And it feels like part of attending a sporting event to
especially
me.
When it is reactionary to something that has just happened on the field. Like they'll play like, you know, that na 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 hey hey goodbye song on organ when someone like strikes out at a ball game just to really fucking razz the other team.
I mean, when the team scores, obviously, when they have to like in hockey anyway, when they get like a power play or they have to kill a penalty.
Yeah.
Like it just feels like a, I don't know, like a touchstone.
Yeah. Can I steal you away?
Yes.
We all got needs. And to satisfy those needs, we subscribe to different services. to fulfill those needs. Some of them are pretty dang good at it, if I do say so myself. But then you put away your childish things. You say, I don't have a need for a string cheese subscription service.
I keep receiving this huge box of string cheese every month and immediately throwing it away.
Yeah.
Maybe I should not receive this huge box of string cheese every month.
But you forget, don't you? So easily.
I know.
Your many subscriptions you've scattered, like Johnny Appleseed to his apple seeds. Well, Rocket Money is here to help. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps you lower your bills so that you can grow your savings. I've used Rocket Money before, and it found, not a joke, maybe 6 things that I had completely forgotten about. Like, maybe about $50 a month worth of shit that I just completely did not know, nor did I interface with the things that I was subscribing to.
Yeah, it's like that. We got that one app that promised to show us hockey and then almost entirely stopped showing us hockey.
Yep. And Rocket Money was like, you're not watching the hockey anymore. The Blues lost and not in the playoffs. Anyway. Rocket Money is fantastic, and we recommend using it if you think you might have some of those phantom subs. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/wonderful. That's rocketmoney.com/wonderful. One last time, rocketmoney.com/wonderful. Folks, I'm recording this ad by myself because Rachel, she did something totally wild. She hopped on her electric e-bike, and she was like, I am out of here. And then she zoomed off. She hit a ramp and flew up in the sky like an E.T. movie and just went so fast that I was like, dang, where'd my wife even go? And she yelled from over the horizon on a bike adventure. And so I have to celebrate that. I have to cheer for her on that. This bike that Rachel got from Electric E-Bike, it is one, very sleek and stylish. It looks fast because it is. The battery lasts forever. It shows up at your door, ships for free. It's got a quick toolless assembly, and you can even fold it up for easy travel and storage. It is the perfect time of year to have a sweet little bike for yourself to go on your own bike adventures away from your husband. Anyway, go full throttle into spring with Electric E-Bikes, the number one selling e-bikes in the nation. Get your adventure started at electricebikes.com, and please mention that Wonderful sent you in the post-checkout survey. That's electricebikes.com.
Hello, everyone out there. Thank you for coming to our service.
Yes.
We are ready to heal you. We are Ross and Carrie. We are faith healers. Yes,
yes,
you there.
Yes, sir. You have a spirit of...
not listening to enough podcasts.
We have the solution for that.
Oh, we can cure you.
You should listen to Oh No, Ross and Carrie. Hallelujah. It's on Maximum Fun.
I couldn't have said it better myself.
Yes, and ma'am.
Yes, you there. Gladys.
A spirit of boredom?
Oh my goodness, we have the solution for you. It is to listen to the podcast,
Oh No, Ross and Carrie.
The human mind can be tricky. Your mental health can be complex. Your emotional life can be complicated. So it helps to talk about it. I'm John Moe. Join me each week on my show, Depression Mode with John Moe. It's in-depth conversations about mental health with writers, musicians, comedians, doctors, and experts. Folks like Noah Kahn, Sashir Zameda, and Surgeon General Vivek Murthy. We talk about depression, anxiety, trauma, imposter syndrome, and perfectionism. We have the kind of conversations that a lot of folks are hesitant to have themselves. Listen, and you won't feel as alone, and you'll have some laughs, too. Fresh Mode for Maximum Fun at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
I just picked up my phone to start reading my notes and it was just greeted with Darude's very serious looking face. You're doing great, Griffin. Keep it up. I want to talk to you today about appetizers. Appetizers.
Oh, you're good at this.
Appetizers?
Well, I just feel like you always have an eye out for it.
Appetizers, yeah, for sure.
That used to be one of those questions when I would go to a restaurant when they were like, oh, can we start you off with anything? I would instinctively say no.
Yeah.
Just felt like I am here to save money and I'm only going to be focusing on my meal. Thank you.
Me, though, the extravagant hedonist that I am.
This is like a McElroy family tradition, though. It's just always having like a selection of apps.
I like a selection. Yeah, yeah. For sure. I like options. I will say that this bit was inspired by during all of our sort of holiday drives, we got into the Off Menu podcast, which my brothers have been suggesting for a while with James Acaster and Ed Gamble. It's a delightful show. They invite a guest on each episode and have them sort of devise a dream menu, complete with drinks and starters and side dishes and main courses and desserts and et cetera.
Uh-huh.
There's a great episode with Greg Davis, host of Taskmaster, whose bold stance on his starter of choice was to skip it, was to just not have a starter because it detracts from the main course, which feels like sort of where you used to operate from before I...
Yeah, there was this idea like, well, I don't want to fill up before my meal. I don't want to pay for additional food that I was not coming here for.
Right. A wild sentiment.
I know. Now I really appreciate it, though.
Yes. When we go to a restaurant, I feel like, one, it doesn't happen that often these days. It is hard for us to get out to a restaurant with or without our children. A huge draw for me is like experiencing that restaurant, like getting a feel. I like to feel like I've gotten a feel for like what that restaurant's whole vibe is all about. I love going to a restaurant, like finding out what the like big all-star item on the menu is and trying it and just feeling like there's an understanding there. And appetizers are the easiest way to accomplish that in my book.
Can I ask you, and you may not be aware of this, but when you get a menu, do you look at the entrees first and then go to the appetizers?
Absolutely not. Wild. No.
Oh, really?
When you read a book, do you jump in at chapter 15?
I always like, I figure out like, what do I want to eat? And then it's like, oh, do any of these things up top look good too? Like I start with the main and then double back on apps, but I didn't know if that's how you did it.
When I am choosing an appetizer and a main course, I am building a narrative.
Yeah, of course.
For the meal. The two things have to be in conversation with each other.
True.
And so like it's hard to tell which one I look at first because I'm kind of looking at both of them at the same time to write a story of food. or I guess reading the story that the restaurant has built for me. There's some appetizer staples that I will always like spring for if I see them on a menu. I love an egg roll. I love an oyster. I love if we go to like any kind of like Tex-Mex restaurant, like I will want to get chips in either guac or queso if I'm feeling naughty. And these are not things that you can make a whole meal out of, right? Like I would not ever have a meal of egg rolls. But as like a little bonus bite, that's always very, very exciting for me. If we are going to like, I genuinely, jokes aside, do like to kind of like think about how my appetizer is going to pair with the main course.
Yeah,
if we go to a Japanese restaurant and I know I'm going to be eating raw fish or some other sort of sushi experience for my main course, I like to start out with something like fried and greasy that is not going to be anything like what I'm going to have for my main course.
Yeah.
And I think that's why you get so many options in the vein of like takoyaki or gyoza or I love a croquette, like a potato croquette.
Yeah.
Just something fried and kind of greasy. And then you get that just peak of freshness with the sushi experience at the tail end. And then there's, of course, like restaurants where the apps are sort of the star of the show, be it a Cheesecake Factory or a Chili's or, you know, an Applebee's, which we don't hit up, I would say, a lot these days.
It still really surprises me a lot when I'm at a restaurant like that. And it's like your apps can range from like garlic bread to like crab rangoon to like pretzel bites, you know,
nachos.
Just like every app you could think of.
But that's great because now you've just given me an even greater challenge in writing a food story tonight in this Cheesecake Factory. Writing a food story at the Cheesecake Factory is like improv. It's like your audience is yelled at you like a bunch of really incongruous sort of suggestions, and it's up to you to kind of like make a narrative out of it. As you know, my tastes have become slightly more refined, and my access to like very good food has developed. You know, tapas is just all appetizers. That's basically what that experience is. If we go to a place with like a chef's tasting menu, small bites, fuck yeah, like yeah, absolutely. That's an appetizer marathon, and I'm here for that as well. I'm just saying, when you get appetizers with your main course, you get two dinners, and that is just efficient. It is hard to track the exact origin of appetizers because it's not that outrageous of an idea to have a little dinner before your big dinner.
The way I always view it too is like, how hungry am I? If I am super hungry and it's going to take a while for my food to come out, like give me something to pass the time.
That's a good point. I guess it changes based on what you're bringing into the experience. Yeah. But across a broad range of cultures, there are different takes on appetizers. There's the Russian zakuska, the Middle Eastern mezze, the Swedish smorgasbord, the Italian antipasto. All the way back to like ancient Rome, dinners were usually two main courses with a bunch of little bits of like fish and cheese and veggies and other stuff mixed in there, which they called promulsis. Ancient Greeks did something similar, called it prapoma. France really cornered the market back in like all the way back to like the Middle Ages with your hors d'oeuvres, your canapes, your entremets,
your mozzarella sticks.
Entremets also sometimes weren't food. It would just be like a little bit of art that they would bring out, which is wild.
Interesting.
I don't want that.
I'm sorry. I can't finish. I'm full up on art.
I filled all the way up on art. They would just know that it is good to bring out a bunch of little dishes either before or between the main courses, the order of which specifically in France became sort of more and more formalized throughout history. Though there are a lot of different sort of versions of appetizers throughout history, the logic behind appetizers in sort of ancient cultures was pretty uniform, and it was to have a little bit of food to stimulate the appetite before you ate a lot of food. That seems weird to me, I will say, because I have never tucked into a order of mozzarella sticks thinking like, this is really going to get me hungrier for the meal that is to follow. Usually, yeah. I know I am always robbing Peter to pay Paul. I am not like starting up my eating engine by having a bunch of mozzarella sticks.
This leads me to a question. Do you consider a basket of bread an appetizer?
Yeah, sure. Not legally, but it is a starter. It is a pre-thing. I feel like we've talked about starter bread specifically on the show before. Okay. I'm trying to broaden the horizons a little bit by including all sort of starters. Because I know I'm not getting hungrier by eating an appetizer. I am reducing my capacity for the main meal, but I don't care because that's the last benefit in my book of the appetizer. And I swear by this, whether I'm out at a restaurant or ordering out from like a nice restaurant, it's why I almost always spring for appetizers. If you eat the appetizer, you eat less main course, which means leftovers.
This is something you have taught me.
Yes.
This idea that the appetizer is part of your meal and that when you get full, you will probably still have entree left, which is good news.
That's lunch.
Yeah.
That's tomorrow's lunch. And that's amazing. We don't have the opportunity to go out to restaurants a lot. And so I feel like choosing food when we do have that experience is somewhat stressful because you want to do it. You want to win dinner. You want to do the right thing. And I feel like knowing that I can have a few different options via appetizers takes a lot of the weight and stress off of that decision. I love appetizers.
Yeah, no, I know that about you. By the way, as you were talking, I was thinking about how a restaurant that served very large portions and called themselves Tomorrow's Lunch would be great.
That's
I want to
really
get that on record.
Yeah,
2024, Rachel McElroy, Tomorrow's
Lunch.
Actually,
unfortunately, that isn't how any of this works. I've learned, unfortunately, after generating so many great ideas.
You mean you can't just say TM, TM, TM?
No, that's, I've learned from our lawyer and lawyer team and legal guys that that's not actually anything.
Okay.
Hey, do you want to know what our friends at home are talking about?
Yes.
Hannah says, my small wonder is my hiking boots. They have been keeping my feet warm and dry through all the snow, sleet, slush, and rain we've been having. We have not been having, we had a fucking lot of rain over the last week. No snow.
I know.
To speak of, which is a bummer, but I do love, I do have a pair of like heavy, like winterized boots that I always feel fucking great when I wear.
I wore impervious. Rain boots yesterday.
Yeah.
And it was really exciting because when you purchase something like that, you know that you're only going to be wearing them like maybe 12, 14 days out of the year, at least if you live in a place like this.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, this is one of those times.
Yeah. I will say when I wear them, I have to sort of like reacclimate when I drive so that I don't just like slam the pedal down with my incredibly heavy and powerful and impervious boots. This one was sent in by, I think I'm supposed to come up with a clever name or something, who says, my wonderful thing this week is the sound of a flute. I work as a machinist at a company that makes flutes, and every now and then I can hear snippets of flutes being tested while I'm on break. It makes my job feel whimsical.
Whoa.
What a fucking job, man. What a job to make flutes, but also just like be working and just hear like, do-do-do-do-do.
God, that feels like a video you would watch on Mr. Rogers. Like, we went to a flute factory and then you just watch in awe.
Yeah,
like,
I can hear Mark Summers saying, we all love flutes, but how do these sweet silver tunnels of sound get made? Join me today. What's that show called?
How It's Made?
How It's Made. That's a good name for it.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for listening. Thank you to Bowen and Augustus for theme song Money Won't Pay. You can find a link to that in the episode description. Thank you to Maximum Fun for having us on the network. Go to MaximumFun.org. Check out all the great shows there. Again, I'll plug it. The Adventure Zone versus Dracula starts tomorrow. It's a fun, lighthearted romp to kill Dracula, and you can get in on the ground floor.
Yeah, this one's for everyone.
This one's for everyone except Dracula.
Yeah.
He probably wouldn't like some of the stuff that we say about him.
Yeah.
We have new merch over at macroymerch.com, including a three brother wolf t-shirt.
God, so good.
Which rules, and I'm very happy for. We got some nice Fungalore merch coming down the pipeline, which I'm stoked about. If you don't
every
know,
time I see a piece of McElroy merch, I go through this internal war of like, is it weird if I wear that? But this three brothers wolf thing,
it is. I think that specifically,
I probably couldn't wear.
Probably couldn't wear a shirt.
Like this is my husband and his brothers on a shirt.
You could wear it, just not where I am with you. Also,
yeah, that's true. Wait, is he on your shirt?
He, but that's it. Thank you so much for listening. I love doing this show every week. It's a nice little
me too.
Break, and I hope you all feel the same way, dear listener. And we'll be back next week with more good stuff to tell you all about. So join us then for another exciting installment of the Chronicles of Narnia.
Love it.
Maximum Fun,
a worker-owned network
of artist-owned shows,
supported
directly
by you.